Do you want to save money on your student loans? Are you interested in earning an MBA with entrepreneurship as your goal? Are you considering Harvard Business School as the place to earn that degree? Pull up a chair, or at least plug in your earbuds. Our guests are the founders of a new student loan entity and Harvard Business School MBA students. Welcome to the 313th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Acceptance Podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Today's featured resource is Accepted's upcoming webinar, Get Accepted to Harvard Business School, which I will present twice on Wednesday, June 12th. In this packed one-hour webinar, more like a workshop, I lay out the essentials of your Harvard Business School application. It is one of our most popular MBA webinars, if not the most popular one. Reserve your seat at accepted.com/313download. Again, that's accepted.com/313download. And we'll also link to it from the show notes. Now, we have two guests today and a lot of ground to cover, so I'm going to give them very brief intros and leave more time for the interview. My guests today are Chris Avkarians and Nikhil Agarwal, both members of the Harvard Business School Class of 2020 and co-founders of Lever Edge, which can help you reduce your student borrowing costs. And that's true whether you are applying to law school, medical school, or business school. Nikhil earned his Bachelor's of Science in Aerospace Engineering from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in 2012 and worked for Boeing for 6 years before making the move to Boston in 2018. Chris earned his BA in Political Science and Public Policy from Duke in 2012 and then started his career at LEK Consulting, where he worked for approximately 3 years before joining Netflix, where he worked in content strategy and analysis for another 3 years. Then he, too, made the move to Boston to begin his studies at Harvard Business School. With that as background, let's learn about their MBA experience at Harvard, the founding of Lever Edge, and the savings it can provide you. Chris and Nikhil, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for joining me today. Now, can you each tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what you like to do for fun, that kind of stuff? Chris, why don't you start?
Sure. So, born and raised in Los Angeles with a fairly large family, a lot of whom immigrated to the U.S. a little while before I was born. Grew up with the biggest Laker fan that you can meet, which makes being in Boston surrounded by Celtics fans a little bit challenging on a daily basis. Led to a continued love of basketball, going to Duke, where there was no chance I could ever actually play for the real team. But if I'm not working on Lever Edge, I'm trying to catch a game and play one if I have time to.
Okay, great. I'm a fellow Angelino, by the way. Not much of a sports fan for any sport, but, you know, I am an Angelino. Okay. Nikhil.
I grew up in Hyderabad, India. It's a town in South India. Spent 18 years of my life over there. Moved to Urbana-Champaign, which was kind of a shock. In my head, I was picturing skyscrapers. I came to cornfields, really different. And then made my way to Boeing in Seattle. That was a very exciting experience. Spent 6 years in product development over there, developing new airplanes. I work primarily on the 777X, which will come out next year. So I'm pretty excited for when that happens.
As long as it's not the 737 MAX, we're okay.
Yeah, it's not that I didn't personally work on the 737 MAX, but I do know a lot of people and I do know what they're going through right now.
It's hard.
And now made my way to HPS, pretty much spend a ton of time on leverage now.
Okay, great. We're going to definitely get to leverage. We're going to spend a lot of time on that, but I'd like to know a little bit about your MBA journey. What was the hardest part? Let's start, Nikhil, this time with you. What was the hardest part for you of the MBA application process?
I think for me, it was first convincing myself that I'm even good enough to apply to HBS, or I'm the right kind of person that can get into HBS. And it took a number of discussions. And there was one key discussion I remember where a friend was telling me, Nikhil, you live in this bubble because you're surrounded by people just like you who are doing all kinds of cool things that you don't realize there are very few people in the world that get to develop new airplanes. And that was the start of, you know, building a little bit of confidence and allowing me to eventually hit the submit button on that application, which led to, you know, coming to HBS. I think that was the toughest part, just convincing myself.
That's actually
that
part of, isn't there even a video now on the HBS site? I am I good enough? Isn't that on, I don't know, you guys have no reason to visit it now, the admission's not part of the site, but I think I saw something very similar, just along that theme. Very recently. Chris, how about you?
Great question. I think the hardest thing was figuring out how to weave a narrative that makes sense, not just in the essay, but through all portions of the application, your interview and your interactions with people. My background is a little bit haphazard, going from Duke to working on some political campaigns, to consulting, to somewhat media career at Netflix, and trying to weave a compelling story. Sometimes you sit back and realize that it's kind of difficult to fully explain the rationale behind why you did what you did, and figuring out how to put pen to paper and convince other people that there is intentionality behind it and that it's leading somewhere, and that the MBA process is a step on the way to what you want to do next, is just a little bit daunting at times. But when you get it and you figure it out, it actually brings you a level of personal clarity. The application process itself started off as something that seemed like a burden, but turned into, in many ways, a gift.
Derek Bolton, the former head of admissions at Stanford, felt very strongly that that was his primary purpose. And I'm not sure I completely agree with that, but I think if done right, it definitely has that, that quality. I also think that Harvard's application is an excellent one. As long as you take the boxes as seriously as you take the essay, then there is that opportunity to present a narrative, as you put it, an authentic narrative, I might add. And of course, that leads to an interview and that the interview builds upon. But I think it's an excellent application. And obviously, I have some perspective looking at different ones. What do you like most about being at Harvard Business School?
It might sound a little bit cliche, but it's hard to put a value on the people that you're surrounded with on a daily basis from such different backgrounds. I thought that I had that in consulting. I thought that I had that in a growing media and tech company. But then you meet people from backgrounds that you don't know at all. And it's not just that you learn things you wouldn't have learned. It's that you realize there are things that you're interested in that you would have never known that you could be interested in. And the conversations don't just stop in class when you actually hear someone's perspective on something that you hadn't thought about before. 95% of the value is what happens outside of class. And if you're able to take full advantage of that and leverage it, then I think there is really no limit to what you can get out of it.
Nikhil?
I'm going to say pretty much the very, very similar words. I think one of the things was I used to think of myself as someone who was very like rational, you know, took all the input, and then based on that, you know, made a sensible decision. And after coming here, I realized, one, either I was dealing with the simplest problems in the world, where doing that was very easy, right? Or two, I was just really, really bad at what I thought I was good at. So both of those things, you know, really come from listening to people, understanding, like, for example, beliefs, right? Beliefs can be so strong for some people that you just don't see the side of the world unless you come here or a place like this where you get exposed to so many different views. It's all about the people. It's all about, you know, the people you're surrounded with, and that's honestly the best part, helping me pop the little bubble I was in.
One thing I would add to that, making me think, is first couple of weeks, to be honest, I was a little bit skeptical that you're gonna really get to know people well. You're in a room with 93 people every day, in a broader class of over 900 people, and a lot of people have their guard up and a bit of a shell around them, and it's hard to actually get to know people. But there is a lot of intentionality in how the program is set up and the forced events and things that initially seem a little bit annoying, but after a few months, you actually can reflect and see the value of. And so we just had our last day of classes end about an hour and 15 minutes ago. And I feel like I actually really do know one of the people in my section really well.
It was quite emotional. I imagine yours was also pretty emotional, right? Yeah, it was surprisingly emotional. And we are still going to be together for another year, and it was still so emotional.
Right. This is the halfway point, then. This is really the halfway point.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, at the halfway point, what do you think could be improved at HBS?
I think my biggest thing has been, I don't think the time allocation has been appropriate in some of the subjects, primarily due to the use of the case method. The case method is awesome in some subjects, but I think HBS is a little bit over-devoted to it. So I think there are certain topics we can learn, you know, without the case method, more efficiently, using less amount of our time, thus freeing up time for me to do other things, you know, either socially or startup-wise or anything else I want to get involved in.
For example?
I mean, the classic example where like accounting or finance, right? Those courses. I mean, we definitely dive into areas that require the case method towards the end of the course. But the first few classes, maybe even the first 60%, 70%, I don't think you need the case method for that. Let's just do it in a more straightforward format that's more efficient, utilizes everyone's time a little bit better. I think that that can be helpful.
I would very strongly agree with that, especially for finance and accounting. There's a set of students who do their own reviews, much more technical reviews of finance before midterms and finals, and they are absolutely amazing at what they do. But had we actually had that experience in class for just a few days out of the 25 to 30 sessions that we have per class, then I think we'd be better off. There's also
a little bit more didactic instruction.
Yeah, exactly. The case method is great for a myriad set of circumstances, but only after people are coming from a similar baseline level of understanding for the fundamental material. And it's easier to do that for a leadership course or a marketing course or for some of the other ones that we're required to take in the initial curriculum, a little bit more challenging for some of the things. And I'd say one of the things I wish he'll hit on a little bit is that there was a little bit more flexibility for your own time in the first year. In the first semester, there's actually, I can't even really begin to describe the amount of conflicting calendar invites for things that may or may not be required to attend that exist in that first 2 month window, and you don't really know where to go, what to do, or how to carve out time to do something else. You figure it out towards the end. A lot of things that are required aren't really required. It should be nice to know that up front, that have more free time. And maybe that's subject to the fact that you're trying to get on calls and do things for a startup and figure out how to navigate a few time slots we have.
Right. Okay. How did you when you meet each other? Were you in the same section, or did you meet at an extracurricular event, or how?
Yeah. it's actually kind of a funny story because we met, we didn't know each other. We both got admitted to HBS. We got put in this group chat full of all admitted students, and this is a chat like organized by the school. And in that chat, people were discussing loans. I pitched, you know, the sort of the business idea, the basic business model of leverage, and Chris said, hey, I want to work on that too. And we got to know, I mean, I don't know how many hours we spent on the phone and Google chat and daily messages, got to know each other quite well, even before we saw each other in person ever. Like, I mean, we can get into the startup stuff later, but we accomplished quite a bit, in fact.
So this was all before you got to Boston, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is May of last year. And I remember, like, a day after my birthday, Nikhil sends a message, and I'm like, yeah, sure, let's try that. We're both still working our day jobs, and then we just started talking all day, every day, trying to figure it out, and got quite close.
Wow. Did you know when you applied that you wanted to start a business? Chris, why don't you take that one first?
Yeah, it was a very large reason why I wanted to go to business school and why I chose HBS specifically. I felt like I was getting too comfortable in my job, and I always wanted to try my own thing, and that if I didn't find a way to separate, I probably wouldn't actually step out and do it. And HBS has a wonderful policy that you can take up to 5 years off after your first year if you are trying something and it's working, and come back, and it's an option that maybe we'll use, maybe we won't. We have no idea yet, to be totally honest. But that level of flexibility, I think, is the ultimate insurance policy if you're trying something risky. Because if you fail, then you just get to come back and graduate still.
Get a safety net. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Miguel, did you know you wanted to start a business when you applied? Or
I wouldn't say I knew I wanted to start a business. I was mostly looking for super merit-based thing, whatever that thing was next. So starting a business was one of the options, but I would say I was more exploratory. Let's see what this is. Before walking into business school, in my head, I was like, oh, consulting sounds like a super, super cool thing, because every few months you change the project you're working on. You know, thoughts change after you meet a lot of people. And so I was kind of really, really excited that, you know, we got into the startup world pretty early on. Pretty much never looked back since. So, yeah, walking into B school, no, I was just exploring. 1 month later, I was pretty set. This is the right thing to do.
All right, great. So now, what is leverage?
Leverage is an attempt to use a group buying power to reduce student loan rates. So last summer, as Nikhil was mentioning, we were able to collect interest from a few hundred MBA students who needed to get student loans, just like we did. We then pitched that portfolio of loans to a wide set of banks and other lenders and got them to competitively bid on rate, with the idea being that we would guide the entire group towards the one winner who bids the lowest rate overall for each person in the group. And that winner will make up in volume what they lost on margin.
So basically you collect the financial information from a specific group of students. In last year's case, it was MBA students. I assume it was mostly your classmates, right? And then you present it to different lending institutions. Okay, go for it. Go ahead.
So we started exactly where you said. We started with our classmates. We had about 70 of our classmates signed up. Mm-hmm. And then we went to the banks. Most of them were not interested in talking to us. The few that were interested ultimately said, like, look, guys, 70 is too small. You know, if you have 500, we can think about it. So then we reached out to all our friends at all the other B schools. And like within 10 days, we had about 700 people signed up. And that's really when, you know, the lenders got quite excited. We were able to start actually negotiating substantial discounts for them. And, you know, the deal we ultimately closed was pretty awesome. All the students loved it. We got really, really strong positive feedback. So I think that going to the other schools was the critical moment that, you know, got additional leverage to go negotiate the deal.
And can you just give us an idea of like what were the interest rates that your group was charged as opposed to what they would have been charged had they not gone through leverage?
We did a survey of all the students to precisely learn that. The median was around 6.3%. So that was the rate that they were getting before leverage got involved. And then once we got involved, 90% of the group got 5.25%. And there were opportunities to reduce that even further. Yeah, so the average student saved about $8,000 each. Yeah.
I'd say one thing that there are really two values to it. There absolutely are monetary savings that happen, but there's also a lot of value in just bringing simplicity and clarity and direction to the process. When, like, we had some friends who were asking us what they should do because they're looking at 10 different options, all of which have different terms, lengths, variable versus fixed structures, and it's really hard to actually compare things. Okay. And so we just kind of sat down, spent a few days just simply modeling out every option that exists out there and pricing what it actually costs you to come up with a simplified way. And we've come to realize a lot of people just kind of wanted to know where they should go and what they should do with a high degree of confidence that they'd be getting a good deal at the same time.
It's true. Makes sense. How did you think of this idea? I mean, it sounds obvious as you talk about it, but obviously you've had student loans for decades. So who thought of it? How?
We were really inspired by 30 students in Israel. So 30 students in Israel, they went to a bank and they essentially told the bank, you know, all 30 of us will take a loan from here if you reduce the interest rate. And that bank agreed. And when we heard about it, we were like,
Israel is a much smaller country. Israel is a much, much, my son lives in Israel, much smaller country. So obviously you get 30 people together and it's like, I don't know how many people, probably like 700 people here, but go ahead.
No, that's really it. That's where we got inspired. And that's when we said, let's try this in the United States. And once it worked, you know, the first year, we were like, we want this benefit to be available for every generation of students, you know, that come after us. And that was the reason to get more serious about it, you know, incorporate a business and all that stuff. But that was the inspiration.
I didn't even hear about this group of Israeli students.
The same group chat that we met on. So basically the way it works is some of them posted about this in that same group chat 5 minutes later. Nikhil's asking who wants to try this in the U.S. And the next day we started getting interest from people and reaching out to banks and figuring out how to make it happen. Yeah.
What a great story. What a great story. Now, neither of you have formal finance or financial services background. Has that been a problem for you?
It really hasn't. We've just basically gone to, so it hasn't been a problem, and in some ways it's been an advantage, and I'll explain why.
Okay.
The actual terms that we had to understand and all the potential complexities in the products that we're looking at are ones that we just sat down, modeled out. We're highly analytical in both of our jobs, involved a lot of analytics and just trying to figure out, okay, what does each of these things mean and how could they be different? And one of the great things that I think has come out of this has just been, we have been questioning every assumption for every term that exists in almost every loan contract, to the extent that some of the lenders that we speak with have to go back and double check and make sure that that's what they're turning. So some of these things aren't necessarily that complicated. They just take a few hours to figure out. And once you do, you get a much better grasp of what it looks like.
I would change a few hours to like days and weeks.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you give it the time, you can piece out, exactly how you can, you know, model these things out in a way that you can sort of evaluate all the options in front of you.
And in terms of leverage making its own money, do you just take a certain percentage, or do you charge a point or something on the loans? How do you make your money? What's the source of revenue for you?
We thought really hard about this. We were, you know, in our mind, we really wanted to make sure that whatever we build here is student first, right? So all the incentives have to be aligned for the student. So the way we structured it is it's completely free for students to join. The students have no obligation to take the loan we negotiate. So even after they join, like if they don't like the deal, they have a better deal somewhere else, we fully encourage them to go there. You know, we have a high degree of confidence that our deal is the best, pretty much. Because, you know, we're negotiating and comparing to public rates. But if someone has some special deal somewhere, they should totally go for it. So that's why we structured it that way. And the way we make our fee is we tell the lenders upfront, even before they submit a bid, we tell all the lenders that, hey, this is our fee. We're going to charge per loan originated. We're going to take a percentage. And they know that upfront. It's not up for negotiation. That's the only fee. And that way, everyone's incentives are aligned to select the lender that offers the lowest rate to the student.
So the banks are actually the ones that are paying you, correct? Not the students.
Yes.
I see. No. Okay, got it. Now, you're now helping students with refinancing as well as with originating their loans, correct?
Yeah.
Right? And you've also branched out from MBAs and have added JDs and med students, correct?
Yeah.
And are the savings that you talked about, I think $8,000 savings, are they similar for law school and med students, or are they greater? I would assume they're greater because their loans would go for longer.
For med, certainly quite a bit larger.
Yes.
So that's a saving for a year of the program. So yeah, law at three, dental and med at 4 to 5. Then yeah, those aggregate savings and interest and fees that you would pay over the course of your entire education do scale up quite a bit.
Okay. And how has the Harvard Incubator Lab and HBS's other entrepreneurial resources helped you or played a role in you getting leverage off the ground and really into orbit? I mean, it's fantastic what you guys are doing.
I'd say that, so we're sitting in the Harvard Innovation Lab right now.
Oh, all
it's
right.
Kind of where we go after class every day.
It looks neater than my office.
This is just the one clean room. Everything else is like, it's honestly been incredible. Like the Innovation Lab itself is something that I didn't anticipate would be as helpful as it actually is. And it's a combination of having other people around who are also working on things and not doing the formal recruitment process, which honestly is actually a bit of a challenge to avoid. There's a lot of pull to go towards the same thing that a lot of other people are doing. But when you have a different community here, that's not just from the business school, it's people from all the Harvard programs. It makes it a lot easier to have that community of not just people who help you see that there's another way, as well as people who've done this before and have experience to answer questions. And there's an amazing set of advisors who are really our friends at this point, who we see every day and are going to see every day this summer as well. And they're not just people who are previous entrepreneurs and can help answer strategy questions. They're people who, I think, intentionally sit down and talk to us about what kind of lifestyle do you want to live and is this going to be aligned with what you want to do and what are your actual goals and how do you think through things more holistically?
I think the one resource that stands out to me is the Harvard Law School Transactional Law Clinic as well. We've been partnered with them. They've been helping us through, you know, pretty much every legal question that comes up. So even on like the tactical side, sometimes, you know, people imagine the resources to be very like high level advice, that kind of stuff. But I mean, this is super tactical advice. And even like, for example, right now we are thinking we're raising some funds right now, and like all the paperwork that goes along with that. Sometimes when we don't understand things, we send it over to the folks at the HLS Law Clinic, and they review it, talk to us, explain it to us in plain English, and we say, okay, now that we understand it, we can negotiate it or we can accept it, etc. So things like that have been incredibly helpful, and the quality of work is also phenomenal. I tell this to Chris often. Like, I don't know if you can pay lawyers to do this amazing work.
You can pay them, but you'll pay them a lot.
Trying to avoid that for now.
Yeah.
Say that one thing I would just add from the business school side specifically is the professors are phenomenally helpful. I can't underestimate the lengths to which they'll go to help put us in touch with people that they think we should talk to that we haven't even thought of yet. And as another very clear example, a lot of this business is based on negotiating with the lender. And so 2 weeks ago, when we were thinking about what we should think through as we're negotiating a new pool, we were able to just sit down with one of the world's foremost negotiation experts, who's the head professor of that course. And he just basically walked us through how he would set this up. And I don't think that we could actually have even thought of some of these things had we not had him around.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing. All right, great. How do you manage the demands of a top, the top, maybe, MBA program and running a business?
Chris is the expert at this.
All right, Chris, why don't you start?
Nikhil,
you can keep thinking while he's talking.
It's honestly quite difficult, but you have to choose between what you really care about, whether it's the business, the academics, the social life, and other aspects like sleep.
FOMO?
I'd say sleep is the one that's probably lost out more frequently than not. But it's important, I think, and when we talk about this a lot, to not lose sight of what the true value of HBS actually is. And while it's amazing to run this and to have fun learning through it, we also want to make sure to get to know our classmates and the people around us who will be lifelong friends. And so I think we've played a decently good balance trying to do both.
Yeah, I think I personally admire Chris, actually. He's being a little bit humble. He makes it look incredibly easy. You're the social chair, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he's the social chair. Like, you know,
social chair of your class or of Leverage?
Opposite section.
So Chris is really a role model here in how you can effectively manage your time across different things and really pull all of them off really well. For me, I also balance my time between a partner. My wife is here with me at HBS. So she definitely made some sacrifices in, like, you know, time with me and things like, and honestly taking things off my plate whenever she can. So that's an amazing support structure to have when you're off trying to, you know, pursue things that normally don't fit in a schedule.
And what are you doing over the summer? The year's almost over. Summer's around the corner for you.
Yep.
Leverage.
Yep.
You're gonna
pretty much what we're focused on the entire summer, and certainly into the fall, hopefully beyond.
All right. So you do plan to stick with it beyond business school?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you see this model working with other forms of consumer debt, credit card debt, or mortgages? Have you thought about that at all? Or just branching out into larger student debt? Obviously, there's the whole undergraduate market. There's other graduate PhDs. You know, they collect debt like crazy. I mean, what are your dreams for the future? Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. So we do think this model is scalable. So there's a couple of categories I divide financial products into. One that naturally lend themselves to group buying power, and that's essentially all the graduate student loans or any loans associated with a particular scheduled program, because the start date is all the same, so then the group negotiation itself falls into a nice schedule. So those are what I would call easy pickings. We're just going to have to expand and move quickly to capture those markets. The second part of it is something that'll require a modification to the base model. We've not fully convinced ourselves exactly what that model is going to be, but essentially it's things like auto loans and mortgages, where there's not a nice schedule to when people do things. It's a more sort of timeless thing, and we need to figure out exactly how we're going to structure that model. But both things are definitely on the horizon for leverage.
Okay. What would you have liked me to ask you that I haven't asked?
I think why we're doing this.
Okay. Excellent question. Should have thought of that one. Go ahead.
We didn't actually plan to be working on this before we got to HBS or met each other or even thought about it. To some extent, we fell into it because we both needed to use the product itself and saw so much value in it for ourselves that the next cycle of it became our friends asking us if we could help them and their friends asking if we could do the same thing. And the amount of validation in a positive way that comes from being able to do that on a daily basis makes this an extremely fun and rewarding experience. And we are able to, on a daily basis, run every idea we have by our sections and classmates. If there's copy for an email or something else, you can have other people help you and they're more than happy to do it. And so there are some businesses that if we were probably starting would detract from our time and closeness with our classmates. But by virtue of the unique nature of what we're doing, I think it significantly enhanced that relationship.
Yeah. You're helping them.
And they're helping us.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's a healthy relationship in general. You know, if you know, you're able to help each other, that tends to contribute, as I said, to the health of a relationship. You have a problem if one party thinks, you know, A is helping B, and if A thinks A is helping B and B thinks B is helping A and it's not reciprocal, then you have a big problem. But if it's reciprocal and acknowledged to be reciprocal, then you have a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
Nikhil and Chris, I think we're just about finished. Nikhil, did you want to add something to that last question about what do you wish I would have asked you?
Just to expand on Chris's point on the same question, my mind went to a metric we were tracked closely, which is the percentage of people who join us, where do they come from?
Mm-hmm.
And 90% of people in the group come from referrals. That's friends telling them about leverage.
Sure.
So in terms of like you know, being thankful to our member base. I am immensely thankful to our member base, because this really doesn't work unless we have our member base being active and being part of Leverage and spreading the word, getting really the momentum going from a grassroots perspective.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you again, both Nikhil and Chris. I think we're just about finished, and I really want to thank you for joining me and sharing your MBA and entrepreneurial stories with my listeners and me. Where can listeners find out more about saving money on their student loans with Leverage?
They can go to our website, leverage.org, and that's spelled leveredge.org.
Okay, great. So it's all E's on the other vowels. That makes it easier. And we'll link to Leverage from the show notes at exhibit.com/313. Listener, thank you too for joining Nikhil Agarwal and Chris Abkarians and me for Admissions Straight Talk's 313th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admissions Straight Talk. Reminder, you can register for Get Accepted to Harvard Business School, which I will present twice on Wednesday, June 12th. Reserve your spot at accepted.com/313download. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.